Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There's a very interesting development going on. The Nashville Tennessean ran the newspaper, and I wrote about it this morning. The newspaper's reporting on a movement known as the Virgin Lips Movement. It has to do with young Christian couples who are saving their first kiss until their wedding. There is a whole lot more to it than that, of course. And what we're really talking about here is a pushback against the kind of sexual confusion and a sexual immorality of the day, and it has led to some interesting conversation. When the secular newspaper all of a sudden sees something like this and decides it belongs in the news, then it belongs in our conversation as well. I wrote my article entitled True Lips Wait, Sexual Abstinence, Romantic Longing, and Monogamous Lips. You can find it at albertmohler.com. You can find the discussion right here. And as a matter of fact, I want you to join it. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let me tell you the background to this is that there are an awful lot of people who are going to look to this article and think these young people are nuts. These young people are just denying the kind of romantic longing that is a part of being a young person. There are other people, I think, especially even some older Christians who are going to say, you know, I understand and I'm going to honor the Bible's very clear teaching that sexual intercourse is to be saved for marriage. But, you know, when it comes to kissing, I just don't find a prohibition about kissing in the Bible. I think there could be some younger Christians who are going to say, yeah, you know, the problem is, in this culture, with all the boundaries taken down, with all the opportunities for sexual immorality around us, even a kiss these days means more than a kiss. This is the terrain for really good Christian conversation. This is the place where parents, teenagers, young people, just about anyone with a pair of lips has got an investment in this issue. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, I can remember when I was growing up hearing the old line, lips that touch wine will never touch mine. Well, now it's lips that touch mine will not touch mine if they touch mine before marriage. It's a very, very interesting step back. I think a real pushback against the culture. And I think it is emblematic of what a cultural revolution looks like. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that in just a few moments. First, to review some other issues in the news. President Barack Obama released to his administration news that he will declare a proclamation marking the National Day of Prayer this Thursday. But according to Religion News Service and Adele Banks, he is moving away from the White House ceremonies hosted by former President George W. Bush. This is one of those things many people have been looking to. This is a development that was going to indicate, is presumed to indicate, something in the direction that the Obama administration is going to take, certainly with the issues of prayer and civil religion. A White House official said, quote, President Obama is a committed Christian and believes that we should be engaging Americans of faith in efforts to renew our country, end quote. Now, this means, by the way, that there will be none of the ceremonies that had been experienced during the 8 years of the Bush administration. And that's a big change. Shirley Dobson, who is the chairperson of the National Task Force on Prayer, the chairman identified here as the National Day of Prayer Task Force, and, of course, well-known, Shirley Dobson, the wife of Focus on the Family founder Dr. James Dobson. She has been instrumental, really, in helping to give this day of prayer a very high national profile. And this committee, the National Day of Prayer Task Force, has been a very clearly Christian organization, even though it has been understood that others would also be praying during the National Day of Prayer. It looks like the Obama administration sees this as just too sectarian, too Christian, and it wants a more generic observation. And that means it really can't do anything in the White House without sending probably a signal the White House does not want to send. So it's not going to do anything at all and indeed just release a proclamation. Tells us something. And I'm not sure all that we can read into this. Shirley Dobson said, by the way, we are disappointed in the lack of participation by the Obama administration. At this time in our country's history, we would hope our president will recognize more fully the importance of prayer, end quote. It will be interesting to see what kind of pushback, of response the White House gets on this. Just as a matter of history, the National Day of Prayer was signed into law by President Harry S. Truman in 1952. So we're looking at the 57th observance. President Reagan amended the law in 1988 to schedule the observances on the first Thursday of each May. That's why the focus has been on this coming Thursday. More on that as we track this story with you. Meanwhile, also in Washington, D.C., the Boston Globe is reporting that New Hampshire Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson, along with more than 300 clergy members from different faiths, were spending time today lobbying on Capitol Hill for support of a bill that broadens the definition of hate crimes to include those motivated by a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, and disability. The House passed this legislation, by the way, last week by a vote of 249 to 175, and it's now going to go before the Senate. President Obama is urging the Senate to support it, saying it would enhance civil rights protections. This is going to be interesting to watch. Bishop Robinson, by the way, said, and I think we need to hear this, he said, quote, "Religion in general still presents the greatest obstacles we face in full equality," end quote. So here you have an Episcopal bishop saying that the Christian church, more or less, since the Christian church dominates in terms of the numbers in this country, that the Christian church is therefore the greatest obstacle that homosexuals face in full equality. He went on and said, quote, 95% of the oppression that we know in our lives comes from the religious community, end quote. That's a very telling statement. I have to wonder if he indeed strategically thought through the implications of what he was saying there. What he's basically saying there is that persons in the religious community seem overwhelmingly to believe that homosexuality is wrong. And he should be the last person surprised by that. There are other things going on that simply lead you to sometimes scratch your head and wonder. Here's a report that is coming out from London. Get this. A council in London has received complaints after artists were encouraged to contribute paintings for a local hospital, but were disallowed from submitting paintings of churches. This hospital is the Queen's Hospital in Romford. The Havering Council, which is the local municipal council there, sent out an invitation for artists to contribute paintings to be hung in the hospital. The artists were invited to submit paintings as a way of improving the atmosphere at the hospital, but they were told, get this, do not submit paintings of churches in order to be, quote, mindful, end quote, of other religions. Interesting. It says that despite the ban on paintings of churches, buildings for other religious faiths are still allowed. You can send in a painting of a synagogue or a mosque, but not of a church. Beryl O'Brien was quoted by the Daily Mail in London as saying, there's so many religious beliefs, why would they pick on churches? What about synagogues? A painting is a good picture because it's a good composition, not because of the religion, end quote. And then she went on to say, quote, it seems ridiculous to try to be so inclusive, and by doing that, exclude persons who are tolerant to some extent, end quote. Well, you don't have to follow her logic. Let's just think about this for a moment. A painting of a church is now a religious statement? That's a very interesting thing. Just imagine trying to paint any scene in London without catching a church. As a matter of fact, London is historically a city of churches for good reasons. In the historic square mile of downtown London, you cannot look in any direction without seeing a church, unless you're just right in front of a building and looking right at its facade. It is impossible. You can't take the churches out of the British countryside. You can't take the cathedrals out of these medieval cities and all their modern environments now. It just tells you just a great deal of how political correctness works. You can't airbrush the church out of the landscape. Now, as for allowing synagogues and mosques and other things, I'll let the hospital council speak for itself. But it does tell us now that it doesn't take much to be offensive. You know, when you start hearing about the hate crimes legislation and you start hearing conversation about hate speech, such as that Bishop Robinson and others were contending for in terms of legislation in Washington. Meanwhile, in London, a picture of a church is all it takes to be offensive. You don't have to say anything about the gospel. You don't have to say anything about doctrine or theology. You don't have to say anything about morality or homosexuality. All you have to do is paint a picture of a church. And evidently, according to this council, the Havering Council, the Municipal Council in Great Britain, that's just too much. There is so much going on in the world that leads you just to scratch your head and wonder. You know, Christians ought to read the newspaper in a very different way than other people would pick up the newspaper. Because if you're not a Christian, you can pick up the newspaper and assume that this is nothing more than a record of what human beings say and do and how it is interpreted through the media and then produced in some kind of readable format. But if you are a Christian looking at a newspaper, you've got to look at it with very different eyes. What we might call Genesis 3 eyes. The Christian looking in the newspaper understands this is how humanity reveals itself. And what we find in virtually every story is a portrait of humanity that is crying out, yes, for correction, but mostly for redemption. You know, you can look at all these issues we just talked about. And the reality is that human beings can come together in a room and try to adjudicate some kind of compromise, can come together to negotiate some kind of consensus. But at the end of the day, there's no rescue from any of these problems, from any of these confusions, except by God Himself. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. This is where we come together to try to think as Christians and to think Christianly. We're thinking from the Christian worldview. The phone number is 877-893-8255. The issue is the Virgin Lips Movement and what it says about sexual abstinence in the 21st century. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The article caught my attention as it appeared in the Tennessean. That's the major newspaper of Nashville, Tennessee, yesterday. Here's the headline, Couples Save First Kiss for Wedding Day, end quote. Now, I'll tell you, when I first came across this, I was actually performing the ceremony for a young couple over 10 years ago now. And they wanted me to say in the midst of the ceremony, when the time came for the husband to kiss his bride, for me to say it was the first time they kissed. I demurred. I did not say that because I felt and I feel it very important to stay to the actual language of the vows, because the moment you start getting creative here, you get creative for any number of purposes and you'll be asked to say any number of things. I thought it was sweet and precious that they never kissed before, but I did not think that belonged as a major part of the marriage ceremony. Now, since then, I've come to know it wasn't just that couple. It was many, many couples. And over the last 10 years, I've come across any number of young people and young couples who hold themselves to this kind of commitment, and I have come to understand and appreciate why. Now the Tennessean runs this story, and it starts out with a young woman by the name of Katie Kruger. It turns out she was married on December the 13th. It was the day she had her first kiss. She said, I wasn't sure what to do. I thought I would mess up. It was in front of 200 people at the Harpeth Hills Church of Christ in Brentwood, Tennessee. But she said that she took to it immediately with her new husband. She said it was so natural that I went back for another. What you got going on here is a generation that is committed to one of the most radical ideas in the modern world, and that is sexual abstinence, which means saving themselves for a sexual relationship in monogamous marriage. Let's be clear about what that means. Now, it should be non-controversial in the Christian church that this would be the expectation, but we're living in such a confused age that we're living in a time in which the world just assumes, as a matter of fact, from any number of authorities we just hear, that the natural, healthy assumption is that young people are going to have sex, marriage not being an issue at all, and that all we should try to do is to encourage them to have sex, quote, responsibly and safely, end quote. Well, now you have a pushback against that, and I think the pushback is necessary coming from the Christian church to say that can't be who we are, that can't be what we do. We are called to a very different understanding of who we are, called to a very different understanding of sexuality, called to a very different understanding of marriage, and there is no way we can give ourselves to that. Now you have this movement in which even the kiss is now limited to, restricted to, exclusive to marriage. Now, according to the Nashville Tennessean, it is a movement known as the Virgin Lips Movement. My article published at albertmohler.com today is entitled True Lips Wait, Sexual Abstinence, Romantic Longing, and Monogamous Lips. Now, the True Lips Wait, I just took from the True Love Waits movement, which, of course, was about saving sexual intercourse for marriage. A radical enough idea on its own in this sexual age of confusion. But when it comes to True Lips Waiting, well, let me tell you what's going on here. I wrote about it in my article, and I thought that as much as it was interesting that the Tennessean gave attention to it, I think there are going to be some older evangelicals who are going to think this is very strange. And I want to come back to some of my older evangelical friends, and as I'm in my 50th year, I'll just classify myself as an older evangelical now. I want to say, you know, you're talking about a generation here that recognizes that a kiss often insinuates more than a kiss, that a kiss is an intimate act in itself, And in an age of where all the sexual boundaries are taken down, all the sexual protections are taken down, in an age in which young couples have not only way too much opportunity for sexual intimacy, but they're surrounded by people who give them the expectation of sexual intimacy, they're saying, we really want to make sure that doesn't happen. We want to assure ourselves that we are recognizing and honoring the boundaries that would prevent that from happening. And that means the kiss is going to have to wait until we're married. There's one other aspect to this, which I'm hearing over and over again. It's reflected in the statement made by Mrs. Kruger here, who was kissed on her wedding day for the first time. And she said, I think it was important for my husband to know that I have never kissed anyone else. Thus, he is the only man ever to kiss me in that way. Very interesting statement. Join the conversation by giving me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Dornsife, Pennsylvania. Mark's on the line. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello, Dr. Bueller. I was, I was surprised to hear this topic on your conversation today. I've been married now for 26 years, and when I had met my wife, she introduced me to this same kind of concept and said she couldn't kiss anyone she wasn't going to marry. And actually, we didn't wait till our wedding day, but we waited till we were engaged to be married, to kiss. And now we have 16 children, with two of which are married, our two oldest, and they've never kissed anyone but their brides.
Okay, Mark, I really appreciate your call. Let me ask you a question. Have I articulated the reason why accurately? I mean, you're in a position to know as a father here. Articulate why they have withheld the kiss until they were married.
Well, it's been my wife and my belief that God has really ordained someone for them to marry, and they've just reserved that kiss for that person. And they've felt that God has led in their lives, and they've met their wives. And so there's really been no other sexual relationship outside of the one with their wives.
I think the crucial thing there is the statement that it is a sexual relationship. And this is where, when I am together with young people, and especially in a Q&A session, I get some of the most interesting questions, and I can predict what some of those questions are going to be. And I'll tell you, here's one of the questions that every youth pastor hears repeatedly. How far is too far? That is on the ground. That's just one of the questions that a lot of young people want to know. A lot of young couples are asking, you know, how far is too far? Now, the problem is, once you start down that road, you're negotiating. And the reality is that the moment, and I'm going to have to say something here that that is a little more upfront and direct than I would most often say on this program. But I'm going to say it because I think without saying this, I am not fulfilling my responsibility. The how far is too far comes down to this. If you go far enough that all systems move to ready and go, you've gone too far. And the reality is that when you're talking about a kiss, the way people kiss, it's very hard not to get there. And I think there's a basic honesty and respect for that is reflected by the young people who make this decision. Let's go to Peoria, Illinois. Tommy's listening on WPEO. What do you think about this, Tommy?
Well, I just want to let you know, I'm 23 years old. I'm engaged right now to be married in 2 months. And me and my fiance have made the same commitment not to kiss until our wedding day. And I just wanted to tell you, I mean, that was not my thinking, you know, growing up. I thought that would have been crazy. But God really got a hold of my life. And I think my whole mindset is how close, you know, our goal is how close to righteousness and holiness can we get, not how close to sin can we get.
Okay, Tommy, I'm going to ask you a right up front question. I hope you're not offended by the question, but I'm going to ask you just as if I was someone that was on the street and heard you say that. Are you afraid of what would happen if you kissed this girl?
You mean now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the gateway into further. I think it'd be hard to stop there.
Okay, Tommy, I appreciate that, and you came through for me there. I just wanted that kind of candor coming from you. I appreciate that. I honor your commitment here, and I wish for you and your soon-to-be bride all the happiness the Lord will give you, and I want to thank you for sharing that. And I wanted a listening audience to hear you say right up front, it's not just the kiss, it's what the kiss insinuates. It's where the kiss points. Of course, there are people who are going to come back and say there's kissing and there's kissing. Well, yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, once you have to define what a kiss is legitimate and when it's not, there's another problem. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The movement is known as the Virgin Lips Movement, and it made the pages of the Nashville Tennessean. It's made the agenda for our program today. I published my article entitled, True Lips Wait, question mark after that, by the way, at albertmohler.com. And you'll find at my article some resources and ways to link to the Tennessean article as well. What I want you to link to right now is our conversation, and we've had some fascinating insights already. You can write us at mail@albertmohler.com. You can go to Albert Mohler or Mohler Radio at Twitter, and Facebook us at the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to go right now to Claremont, Florida, where LaToya is on the line. Go ahead, LaToya.
Hello, Dr. Mohler. I've recently become a Christian, and I've now decided to stay sexually pure. And I just wanted to know, does the Bible prohibit kissing before marriage?
You know, LaToya, it's a great question. If you hadn't asked it, I'd have to ask myself. So thank you for doing that. And I think at this point in the conversation, it's really important to insert something about what the Bible teaches here. The Bible doesn't talk about kissing in this context at all. Other than, in fact, the only references you really find to kissing in that kind of intimate context is what you would find in the Song of Solomon, which is clearly about a bridegroom and a bride. But I will tell you this, LaToya, we've got to be really careful when talking about this, and your question helps me, because we don't want to state more than we should state about what the Bible here holds us to as a standard. The Bible points specifically to virginity as a standard for marriage. And by the way, this means not only for the woman, but also for her husband. The man and the woman should refrain from sexual activity until marriage, and then exclusively within marriage for each other and each other alone. Now, what about what is before that? What about what is, short of sexual intercourse? Well, clearly, there is sexual sin that is not merely, let's say, fornication or adultery, which is intercourse. And as a matter of fact, the New Testament uses a word. It is in the Greek, porneia, which means the wrongful affections. It means a sexual immorality is a general term. It's where we get our word pornography. And so there are certain things, what used to be called heavy petting. Clearly, when you talk about touching and acts that are intended to basically be what would precede sexual intercourse, well, that is completely forbidden by Scripture. It's in those acts that clearly are sinful by the fact that is to be restricted for marriage. Now, when it comes to kissing, there is no particular verse I'm going to point you to here, LaToya. There is no thou shalt not kiss until you are married. And I want to be intellectually honest and say that. As a matter of fact, because of that, I cannot suggest that I think it's morally mandated that every Christian couple follow this commitment. I can tell you that I see it as a very healthy response to a time of gross sexual immorality. And I see it also as a way of honoring two things. Number one, the reality that sexual activity can be triggered, and certainly sexual arousal can be triggered by something far short of intercourse. And this is where I often fear that young women do not fully understand young men. I can just promise you that the answer is almost always yes. If you have to wonder if this is leading somewhere it should not, by the time you are wondering, the answer is already yes. Just take it from me. Pastoral word of advice. The other thing I think it honors is marriage. And I thought the most important thing said in this article in the Tennessean was not just about, for instance, saying that kissing is kind of the gateway drug to fornication or to premarital sex, but that the fact is that it was very important for this young bride, for her husband to know, her groom to know, that he would be the only man that would kiss her in this way, because that kiss insinuates a relationship. And see, that's the big issue. It's not the same thing as sexual intercourse. And it's not even necessarily immoral or wrong, just because you could define a kiss in so many different ways. But anything that is really romantic, that represents romantic longing, and that is indeed in terms of sealing a relationship, as you say, something is sealed with a kiss. Well, if that person is not your husband or your wife, then what exactly is that commitment saying? What is that act representing? I think in some ways, some people are going to look at this and say that this Virgin Lips movement is an almost laughable overreaction. I can hear some people just very haughty and caustically looking at it that way. I got to come back and say, well, all right, you've made that judgment. Now tell me, exactly how would you honor marriage and sexual purity if you are honest in admitting what at least most kisses really are intended to mean? We're not here talking about a father's kiss to his children. We're not talking about the kind of greet each other with a holy kiss you find in the New Testament. We're talking about kissing that means on the lips, kissing, insinuating far more, and we know it. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We are discussing the Virgin Lips Movement, and it is a very interesting discussion. You join us by calling 877-893-8255. Is this going too far? Or is this a very reasonable and much to be admired response to an age of sexual confusion? The phone number 877-893-TALK. Let's go to New Albany, Indiana. Mike's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Mike.
How you doing, Dr. Mohler? I'm a youth pastor at a local congregation, and I'm wanting to know if you have any resources that you could recommend to teach the youth group these concepts.
Well, you know, I think teaching sexual purity and upholding marriage is what is so central, and there's some great things for that. But I'll tell you, I think one book in particular that I would put in the hands of kids, young people really trying to think this through, would be the book Not Even a Hint by Joshua Harris. It has a new title, and that's going to be given to me just in just a moment, because they retitled the book, and we'll put it up at the website just so you can have a link to what that is. I wrote about it. About 3 or 4 years ago when it came out. And so there's a full review of the book at my website at albertmohler.com. Just go to the search engine, write in Joshua Harris. He also wrote the book, I Kiss Dating Goodbye. And there's some good stuff out there on courtship and dating and the appropriate boundaries, for a young couple and for young people trying to think this through. Mike, let me ask you a question. When you're dealing with the youth in your church, do you hear this kind of conversation, or is this a completely strange development to your ears?
This is something that I introduced to the one or two of the youth actually a couple weeks ago, and they were absolutely appalled by it. They thought I was stupid, and they thought that I was out of date.
Well, you know, Mike, being out of date is not the worst thing possible. But the interesting thing to me about this is that the younger you go, the more this seems to make sense in a lot of churches. I think because, you know, there's an honesty about where the kiss is. By the way, the new title of the book is Sex is Not the Problem, Lust Is. It was before, Not Even a Hint. The new title is Sex is Not the Problem, Lust Is. And I think it gets right to the heart of the issues. And what we don't need here is a new legalism. And I appreciate, you know, Mike, the fact you're teaching these young people. What we do not need is a new legalism whereby we say everyone's conscience has to be bound by this, because I think that'd be a very dangerous add-on to the scripture that always ends up subverting the gospel rather than pointing to the gospel. When we come up with some kind of new moralism or new legalism, I think rather what this represents in its healthiest component is a new honesty and a new desire to protect sexual purity and abstinence in order to say, you know, the kissing is not the issue. It's what the kissing insinuates. And what actually happens in that process, and what I am communicating by the kiss. And I respect young people who say, you know, I don't want to communicate what that kiss communicates until I'm ready to kiss the one that I'm going to enter into the covenant of marriage with. And I think that is the big issue. By the way, I think you might find, Mike, some help in my book, Desire and Deceit. Just out a few months ago, brand new in terms of the book world, that book, Desire and Deceit, covers issues like pornography and sexual intimacy and, indeed, what it really requires of us if we're going to be committed to sexual purity in an age like this. And that's published by Multnomah, the title of the book, Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance. Thanks for your call, Mike. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Connie's listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Connie.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to say that I am one who did not withhold that kiss and did not wait. And I'm at middle age, and in my church, I know several young people, late teens, early 20s, who are waiting. They're not part of this movement, but I'm thrilled with this movement, and I think we're just going to be hearing more and more about this type of thing. And it's the foundation of the future church. This is the church that's going to be the elders to my grandchildren. And whoa, you know, don't we have a lot of reason to praise. And I just want to call and give encouragement to these young people and say, you go and keep going and live that lifestyle of holy and, you know, holiness and seeking after God in that purity.
I appreciate your call, Connie. And, you know, when you start pointing to, for instance, the fact that, that these young Christians are going to be the Christian leaders of the future, I am, too, humbled by that. And I'm humbled by the fact that, you know, as someone who's going to turn 50 this year, and you look to this generation I get to see every day on this campus, I'm humbled by their commitment. I think in a lot of ways they're coming with greater commitment than my generation knew, because greater commitment is demanded of them before they even ever arrive here. And I think that's true of marriage. You know, I am very, very thankful that that my wife and I arrived at marriage with our commitments intact. I want to recognize that the generation coming behind us is going to have an even harder time keeping those commitments intact and maintaining sexual purity until marriage. And, you know, we're living in a time of a generation in which a lot of this generation is going to have to be patching what has been wounded. Is going to have to be looking at God's promise of restoration, bringing peace where there have been no peace, and bringing purity where there have been no purity. But the gold standard here, held forth by Scripture, is to follow God's purposes from the beginning when it comes to the gift of sexuality and honoring marriage from the beginning, so that we are not the walking wounded when it comes to really setting ourselves up for not only sinning against God and all that that means in terms of its consequences, but also falling short of the commitments that we really know are right for us to make before God. That's the other aspect of it. You know, in my article, I made the argument that these kids are not afraid of their bodies. That's the kind of thing you hear from people saying, well, these kids are just afraid of sex. They're afraid of their bodies. And this is just really sexually repressive. No, they're not afraid of their bodies. They're afraid of sin. They're afraid of sinning against God. The bodies, they understand. And I don't know, one of these kids who says, I regret that I'm a sexual creature. I regret that God's given me these urges. I regret that God's given me this gift. I haven't heard one of them say that. No, they're looking forward to that. And there's an honesty there. But it's that they are afraid of sin. This is a good conversation. I think it helps to clarify things. We're not creating a new legalism here. We are holding up a model and saying, look, here's some serious young people trying to be seriously Christian about something as serious as sex, something as serious as marriage, and something like a kiss, which understood in most contexts is more serious than most people want to think. Now, again, not all kisses are the same. When you kiss, you know, your children, when you tuck them in bed at night, when you kiss an elderly person as you leave them in the nursing home, when in the New Testament you have the greet each other with a holy kiss, which was kind of the equivalent of a fraternal handshake or a hug, that's very different than the kind of kissing that we're talking about here. These lips are a virgin lips movement, not to avoid that kind of greeting, but rather to avoid what most kisses lock on really mean. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're going to try to take one final call. Let's go to Zach calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. What do you think, Zach?
How are you doing, Doctor?
Doing great.
I don't think much. I just got out of a law school final, so my brain's kind of fried right now.
Well, that's a great time to talk about the radio topic about the Virgin Lips movement. Something crossed your mind to want to talk about this.
Well, yeah, I just logged into Facebook. I was about to go study some more, and I saw that, and just read your new or nearest newest article, and also saw the just the post and stuff. And I thought I'd call in and comment. Seemed to kind of strike close to home. My fiance and I, I'm 23, she's 26, are getting married in 3 months, or yeah, about 3 months right now. And neither of us had ever kissed anybody in our entire lives, and we kind of found that out earlier in our relationship. We didn't even realize it for each other, and we decided that it would be wise and the best thing to do to save our first kiss for marriage. And it's been difficult. We've been now engaged for 9 months or 10 months, but I fully support it. I mean, I fully support the idea in that I think people have to decide for themselves, but I also think that it's been a blessing because staying away from physical intimacy at this point and leading up to marriage has helped us get to know each other in so many different ways and just learn how to communicate and learn how to talk and learn how to do things other than physical intimacy that to me it's just been a blessing, and I would fully support in any situation. But like I said, I do think, too, it's something people have to kind of decide for themselves, too. But
now, Zach, I think you're going to make a good attorney making your case. I'm going to ask you to make one final case here, and that is, if you were asked by someone, one of your best friends comes up and says, Zach, all right, why'd you make this commitment? In say, 30 seconds, distill it down to its essence.
To its essence, I would say to honor God, to stay away from doing anything that might, I think you put it in your article, actually, I think that's why it's popping in my head, anything that might be something that God would not approve of or that would be wrong or even lead to something that's wrong, I guess, yeah, would be the best way to put it. On another angle, I would say that it places value on something that this world has taken value away from, and that's always good to me. Like, I think yeah, in terms of any kind of physical intimacy, this world has taken a lot of value away from it, period. And I think when you do this, it puts the value back into it to where I can guarantee you for 3 months. I mean, in 3 months from now, that is going to be a very valuable moment to me and to my fiance.
God bless you, Zach. We're running out of time here, but I love the way you talk about adding value back to what the world has discounted. That is a great place for us to end this discussion. Thanks so much for calling. Blessings to you and your soon-to-be bride on your marriage. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.